ACB Radio, and welcome to Blind Line for another day. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and it is Thursday here where we are in New Zealand. It's starting to head that way where it's coming up to winter time, and it's always a bit depressing, but we hope that we have some interesting conversation for you that will liven things up. On the program between now and the next couple of hours, well, shortly we're going to be speaking with Dennis Brown from DB Tech. Actually, here in New Zealand, DB is a very nice beer. I think it's better than Budweiser. But anyway, we're not going to be talking about beer, at least Dennis wants to, of course. We're going to be talking about Dennis's work and technology, and you might even be able to ask Dennis a few pointed questions about technology issues, because he's certainly got many answers for you, as people on the JFW list can certainly testify to. And then, of course, it will be an open forum, your chance to have your say on anything you want. There are certainly a few interesting issues to discuss today, so stay with us on Blind Line. Always good to have you along. So, Dennis Brown, without any further ado, a very, I guess, good evening where you are. Welcome to Blind Line.
Thank you.
You've had a very interesting history, I guess, in terms of technology and your involvement in it. For those who aren't aware, can you tell us a little bit about how you became involved in this kind of technology and the way that you use the PC?
Well, actually, I lost my eyesight in a demolition accident. I also lost both hands below the elbow. So the Veterans Administration, I had to figure out a way, so I needed a written communication since I couldn't use a Braille typewriter, things like that. So they started me out with an Apple IIe computer, and with a TextTalker synthesizer and you know, all the Apple software that would work with that. And for input, they started me out with a, I forget the name of it, but it's an input device where I use Morse code. I type Morse code in with my right stump, and it went into a box, and I forget what that box was called, the brand name, but it converted it to ASCII text and sent it on into the computer. And then once we got access to the IBM computers, I switched over to that, and I have what's called an ADAPT-TU, which is a it's an alternate input device, but it's all hardware controlled, so I have a telegraphy key that goes into that, and then it goes into the computer. So the computer thinks the other thing is still coming directly from the keyboard. But I type the other thing in with Morse code with my right stump, and my left stump, I use it to hit the most frequently used keys on the keyboard, and I have a device I designed for my keyboard that fits over it, and it has a hole drilled to every key, and then I have a golf tee in the holes that on the keys I use the most, like the Alt key, Control, Space, things like that. So it gives me about 40, 45 words per minute input, but now once we get access to the IBM system like that, that was it. I was off, and hadn't looked back.
Well, before I ask, you could say that, you know, when people ask me about Braille and people say, gosh, it must be difficult, things like that, and I know from those questions that, you know, it really, you get used to what you have to get used to get the job done. So it's obviously second nature to you now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's something that I wish I had the capability of doing, was reading Braille, because then I could, of course, mark all the diskette CDs and all that, and I just recently found a solution to that. And it's working out really well, but I do miss the capability of being able to do Braille, just like you know, most sighted people had that capability. That would, without any hands, I just didn't have any way that I could, you know, that I could really pick it up. Also, lost most of my hearing. I had total loss of hearing in the left ear, and I had about a 60% loss in the right ear. So I wear a hearing aid, and that is the most disabling factor in my entire life, because that takes out mobility, it takes out office environments, classroom environments, and things like that. So the hearing is the biggest issue out of all the different disabilities that I had.
And you are able to use speech output, though, are you?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I use JFW with a double talk synthesizer, and then under NT I use it with the Eloquence, and then the TechTalk Access 32.
I guess you will have noticed a lot of advancements in computer technology for blind people since you started using this sort of technology.
Yes, definitely. And it's amazing. We still see a lot of people who want to stay in DOS, and that's great if it does what you want it to do. But, man, you're missing a lot of stuff if you don't take that extra step.
Why do you think it is that there's still this harking back to the days of the command line?
It's familiar. You can call a tech support service now, and they had no idea how to drop in and do a command. So when you tell them that you're dropping into DOS to to execute one of the functions they ask you to execute, they haven't got a clue. But, you know, we were sort of cut our teeth in computers on DOS, so we're more comfortable with the command line. But most of your tech support out there has no idea what a command line is. They're all used to the Windows environment, the click this, click that, and so it's sort of something familiar.
If you've just joined us, we're speaking with Dennis Brown, and I should add that you're welcome to give us a call and ask Dennis any questions that you have about his computer usage or any technology questions that you think that he may be able to help with. We'll come on and talk about his involvement with JFW script writing and things soon, but certainly there's a lot that Dennis can tell you, I'm sure. And if you don't have access for whatever reason to the call details, they should be in the title bar if you do a window title hotkey on your screen reader. But if not, the number is a New York number. That's 212-812-2800. That's courtesy of Spiderphone, the number 212-812-2800. Enter the PIN 1083-4173. That PIN again, 1083-4173, and all that should be displayed in the window for you. One of the things that's difficult, I suppose, Dennis, is that when a blind person calls tech support in a regular company, I don't know whether Microsoft is a good example to use or not, but certainly for some of the smaller companies, they don't know how to perform any of these Windows actions from the keyboard.
Yes, exactly. They don't. And one thing you have noticed is I've noticed it with MicroTalk, Corel, a couple of other ones. When you call the tech support and they hear your screen reader, then they seem to gear that as the cause of all your troubles, just because it's something that's totally unfamiliar to them. And just like the DOS command line, it's unfamiliar to them, so they're sort of wary about actually using it.
So do you suggest that people actually, where possible, don't mention that they're a blind person using a screen reader?
I'm sorry, what was that?
That's fine. We've got a call on the line, so we'll take that now, and I'll come back to it. Hi, this is Blindline. You have a question for Dennis Brown.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Marlena Lieberg in Seattle.
Wonderful to hear you, Marlena.
Oh, it's wonderful to hear you, and I just wanted to call and tell Dennis how much I personally appreciate all of the things that you do. I don't have a question, but Dennis has rescued me more times than he may know. And I
well, we seem to have lost the connection there. I'm not sure whether... are you still with us, Dennis? Okay, well, it's possible that Delta 3 has gone down on us. So we'll just see if we can reestablish that connection and come back to that as soon as we can. You're listening to ACB. You back with us, Dennis?
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yes, I appreciate that.
And I'm still here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine again.
Yes,
I don't know what happened there, but we're all back together again, and that's the main thing.
Strange. Well, you know, I mean, we're only going halfway around the world to have a conversation, so... but anyway, I just wanted to say to Dennis that I personally appreciate you so much. And when I saw that you were going to be on this evening, I really made it a point to be able to call in and thank you. I just think you're very cool, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's very kind of you, Marlena, and I appreciate you calling.
All right, Jonathan, we'll talk soon.
I hope so. I'm feeling much better now.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. You're listening to Blindline, and we're speaking with Dennis Brown, and you're welcome to give Dennis a call, courtesy of Spiderphone. You just heard Marlena Lieberg doing it, and that's 1-212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 1-083-4173. When you call a tech support organization, Dennis, whether it be Microsoft or something smaller, do you think it's advisable for people, if possible, not to tell them that that you're using a screen reader?
Exactly. Keep that out of the picture as long as you can, because it's understandable, too. You got a tech weenie there. He doesn't understand anything about his package or hardware or anything like that. So it automatically they try to think that is the cause of your problem. And if not the cause, then at least it is part of the a part of the cause to it. And it's sad that happens, but anytime you call tech support, try to keep the speech out of it as much as possible. But when they start asking what all do you have loaded, when you mention a screen reader, that's one of the first things they want you to take out.
Is there a need for some sort of education on the part of the blind community of these tech support people, or is it just such a mammoth task that it's not even worth attempting it?
I think it's just mainly that most of your software and hardware vendors just aren't used to any kind of adaptive equipment, and so you know it's totally puzzling to them. I've had people come out here to the house on different support organizations, and you know, they see the input device, and it totally blows their mind. They just can't conceive what the computer's doing. They just can't understand the concept. But you know, and it just so let me give you an example. When I worked with MicroTalk, I had a university computer science department head call and say that the DoubleTalk synthesizer was hanging the entire network. And this is a guy in charge of the network, and I asked him to take the DoubleTalk card out and try it. He did. The network hung, but he still blamed it on the DoubleTalk. And it's just something he had no idea how to deal with. And automatically, that was the reason his network was going down. But I don't know. I don't know how to fix that, though. That's that's just something you're going to run into.
You must be a real tech support person's nightmare, because you've got alternative input as well as alternative output.
Exactly, and they want to know, what's that noise? And you know, you could usually hear I have to have feedback with the telegraphy key, so all the dits and dahs and everything, they all feed through a computer, so I can hear what I'm inputting. And once they hear that, they first of all think there's a bad connection on the line, and then once I tell them it's my input device, then they want me to disconnect it to see if the computer is still having the problems. Well, if I disconnect it, I can't use the computer. But, you know, don't know how to fix that. I mean, you got people who just, you know, they don't want to learn or don't understand adaptive input device or adaptive output devices, screen readers and things like that. And it's something you're going to run into for quite a while.
Did you use Morse before you lost your sight, or was that a skill you had to acquire?
That's a skill I had to acquire. And actually, I believe it only takes like 4 hours to learn the basic Morse code, and then everything else is just practice after that. So it's not something difficult to learn, but it is something I had to acquire.
Have you, we'll come back to that question, because we have another call on the line for Dennis Brown. Hello, this is Blind Line.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Richard Costa. I just had a question. I was interested in the way he was talking about the use of a telegraph key in order to work the computer, and I was wondering if he had any experience with the new Rubbermate, that active feedback type mouse device, if he had any experience with that.
Is that the virtual mouse? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, right.
No, I haven't had any dealing with that. I recall someone trying to use it back in the ASAP days, back in the DOS days, and they were just concerned to go to the Windows, but no, I haven't had any kind of dealing with that. They wanted to know if they could send it to me and see if I could use it, but I wasn't into Windows at that time, so I really had no need for it. But I would like to check that out. It does seem like an interesting concept. It's a new way to get information, that's for sure, but it does seem like a pretty interesting concept.
Yeah, that's all I have to say, Jonathan. Thanks, and good show as always.
Thanks very much, Richard. Good to hear from you. You're listening to Blindline on ACB Radio, and if you have a question for Dennis Brown, you're welcome to give us a call. Hopefully the number is displayed on your window title bar if you'd like to have a chat with us. So, there we go, he's gone. Did you take a bit of a while to be converted to Windows, Dennis? Were you one of those people who held off for a while?
Not really. Getting screen access that would allow you to learn basic Windows was one of the difficult things. To know, in the early part of ASAW, or ASAW, the MicroTalk, when I worked for them, it gave me the ability to learn, you know, just the basics of the Windows. So I didn't really get into Windows 3.1, though. I came on the scene mainly when they had Windows 95, and I haven't looked back. I love it. I still do some things in DOS, but Windows just gives us so much more access to things than we would have ever had in DOS. DOS is easier because it's something we're comfortable with, and your screen readers can read it a lot better in most cases, but Windows is definitely the way to go.
Of course, people really came to know you, I think, through your work with MicroTalk. Was that the first technology-related job that you had?
Yes, it was. I started within when MicroTalk came out with ASAP, and I think it was January of 92. I started tech support for them, I think, in July of 92. And I really liked it. I really liked talking to you know, the Vine community, learning people, learning a lot about the computer system, and it was really neat. I worked for them all the way until October of 98, but I really learned a lot. Larry Scoot kind of taught me a lot with the company, and it was really neat getting my foot in the door in the Vine community like that.
Were you approached for that, or did you just apply for a job and it was advertised?
I was co-sysop on Larry's bulletin board, and he was still working at American Printing House then, and so he asked if I would take over the tech support for MicroTalk, and so we tried it. It worked, so it went with that.
You know, although that was a fairly late entrant into the DOS screen reader market, it really still has a huge reputation, doesn't it? People are very fond of the product. It's a kind of thing, it seems to me, that people are very loyal to. If you're a user of ASAP, you're almost a fanatical user of it.
Well, ASAP did some interesting concepts there. It was one of the first ones that actually took a look at the screen to see what the screen was doing to get your attention, and still, ASAP does still get more of the screen data than any other screen reader there, any other DOS screen reader. And it's very small. It fit in the upper memory. It was written in assembly, so it was real tight code. It would you could put it upstairs in upper memory and leave a lot of lower memory available for drivers and things like that. But it was just so simple and so easy to use. The numeric keypad review functions is something that I still wish all the other screen readers would emulate, because we just got spoiled using ASAP and then trying to go to a Windows application, a Windows screen reader that has a totally different review layout. But it was. It still is. It's very powerful and very popular DOS screen reader.
And were you it in terms of tech support? You were the only person doing it?
Yes, Yes, I was.
That must have been quite a workload, because it was a very popular screen reader.
It was a very popular screen reader with very few troubles, very few problems, and that's what. On a given day, I may get anywhere from 2-3 tech support calls, and I may get 10 or 15, but the majority, I'd say an average of about 7 calls a day. And most of those were things that you could get out of the manual that, the user didn't take time to look at or couldn't find in the manual. But as far as actual problems that needed fixing, it's a very, very stable, very steady screen reader. So, no, it wasn't difficult at all, just on a one-man tech support staff.
How do you cope with that? How do you keep your even temper when somebody rings up and asks a jolly obvious question, which is blatantly there for anyone to see if they would only look at the manual?
Well, you definitely don't tell them what you think, because, even tech support guys, we have a bad day every now and then, too. But, the ability to actually sit down and read the documentation on a new piece of software is something that we all have trouble with. We want to go ahead and load it up and see how it works and all that, but I didn't mind getting pointers on how to use it and telling them where in the manual they can find it and all that, and I hope I didn't blow my stack too many times, but you do get people who just would rather load the program, run it, and see what happens, and if it doesn't work, then call tech support. I'm the same way. I like loading a piece of software when I get it, run it, see what I can tear up in it, and if it doesn't work, then I go back and read the documentation. But you do have people who skip that part, reading the documentation, and just go ahead and call technical support.
Yeah, that wonderful old saying, when all else fails, read the manual.
Yeah, exactly. And it gets difficult for a support person, because you're tying up the support line for someone else who actually does have a problem and, trying to get through and can't get through because somebody's calling because they don't want to read the documentation. But it's something we're all guilty of, so
Then the other thing that happens, which I'm interested in, because the stories of you spending literally hours with one person to get them out of a bit of a bind are legendary in the blindness technology industry. What interests me is the line that seems to be almost impossible to draw between somebody who is wanting tech support for a genuine screen reader related problem, but then somebody who wants tech support for, say, WordPerfect or a program that won't work with the screen reader. And it's really not an issue of WordPerfect, of the screen reader not working with it. It's an issue of the person not actually knowing the application that they're using. So how does one draw that line?
It's difficult to do, and sometimes even though you don't want to you don't want to turn off somebody and tell them to go read the documentation for the application rather than the screen reader, but you do have to distinguish that either it is the screen reader or it is the application or it is the user, and then you find out exactly what area it is. And you know, I don't mind telling someone in WordPerfect that you're using this, you need to do this, and if this happens, do that. But you also need to read the documentation, and it doesn't have anything to do with your screen reader. Or if it's something that you can't do well in an application because you're not getting access to the relevant part of the screen, then you know that I do consider that screen reader specific. So at least show them how to get the relevant information with the screen reader, and then let them go from there.
So it must be necessary to become quite familiar with a very wide range of applications in terms of their interaction with the screen reader that you're providing tech support for.
It does. If you can't duplicate the problem the person's having on your machine, then it's very, very difficult to figure out the problem, to troubleshoot it, if you can't actually do exactly what they're doing keystroke by keystroke and come up with the same problem. And 9 times out of 10, you do it keystroke by keystroke, you see what key they're missing, or you see what step they're not getting or comprehending or just skipped over or whatever. So it's easier to handle that export problem if you know what they're doing and you can do it on your system. If you can't, then it's up to them to tell you exactly what they're doing and exactly what's happening, and if they could do that, they wouldn't be calling.
And so that's even worse in Windows, I think, because it is actually possible to go through keystroke by keystroke with someone. And we have this on ACB Radio, you know, when somebody contacts us and says Winamp does not work, and we go through it with them keystroke by keystroke, and they're doing everything that we're doing, and yet something in the registry is obviously screwy, and it's just not working for them.
Yes, it's more complex, and that's one of the things about Windows. It gives you, you know, a million ways to do 100,000 things. So you can approach it at different angles. And once that happens, if you can't do a keystroke by keystroke, then you just try to find an alternate means to get around it. And, you know, the regular troubleshooting tips of using NSConfig to remove things from loading automatically in memory and restart and try again. But I have seen systems put together where they were identical as far as the type of computer, the motherboard brand, the memory, you know, Windows, hard drive, everything, and yet they still act totally different on the same task. And that's not sure why that happens, but...
Well, yeah, the ours is not the reason why. You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream, and this is Blind Line. We're here every week at this time, live 9 till 11 Eastern on a Wednesday night, 1 till 3 GMT on Thursday. My guest is Dennis Brown from DB Tech, and as you're hearing formerly of MicroTalk, we've had a number of listeners join us. I can see them coming up there, and if you'd like to give us a call and ask Dennis a question, you should be able to read your window title bar in Winamp and RealPlayer. That's Insert T in JAWS and Control Shift T in Window Eyes, and that should give you the phone number details. But if you'd like to ask Dennis any questions or just say hi, the number is in New York 1-212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800. And courtesy of Spiderphone, who provide these services to ACB Radio, enter the PIN 10834173. That's 10834173. You're more than welcome to come in on the chat at any time with Dennis and ask any questions or pass on any compliments that you would like to do. What happened to MicroTalk? I know that there were a lot of people who were ever so patient, hanging around for ASAW to really come up with the goods. What actually happened there? Why didn't it make the transition into Windows very well?
Well, I think one of the problems was that we all expected ASAW to do just what ASAP did in DOS. We expected ASAW to do in Windows, give us total access to anything, and it still does. Out of all the screen readers out there, ASAW still gives you more screen data than any other screen readers out there, same as ASAP does in DOS. And it would be really nice if Larry could, if he isn't going to continue, ASAW could get that technology to somebody else, sell it or something, let one of the other screen readers come out with getting all the screen data like that. I'm not sure how he does that. But he, it's difficult to say what the final thing was. It's still going. Microtalk is still going. And Larry works at the American Printing House again. He really likes it there. He's done a real good job that he really loves and he's very good at. But he just couldn't devote all the time he needed to ASAW. So it sailed out of the wayside and eventually it just stopped altogether.
We often hear criticisms about the upgrade policies of companies like Interjoyce, for instance, but was it just that Larry wasn't able to make it back? Were his upgrade policies too generous?
I think so, and a lot of the, of course, a lot of the dealers thought so, but Larry is, that's the way he was. He just wanted to get a product out there that everybody could use at the lowest price, and he didn't really try to come up with an effective money gaining update policy or anything like that. But it's a market out there, and it's a really vicious or active market, I guess I should say, an aggressive market too. And he just couldn't devote the time he needed to ASAW to get it to go on that aggressive market like that.
What's your assessment of the screen reader market today?
It is hot. I mean, you've got a lot of. You've got WindowEyes coming out with their Windows 2000 version. I think it's still in beta now. You've got JFW 3.5 with the NT version. It works with Windows 2000, 98, 95, and it's really neat seeing some good competition out there. And it looks like everybody is going for the latest and the greatest operating system, and it's really neat that you can do that and expect the screen reader to actually handle that operating system when you get it. Like in DOS, when something came out, we would always have to wait for a while before we could get support for it. But in Windows, it's just everything is there.
And active accessibility, is that our salvation, do you think?
I used to be the biggest critic of that, and big time. And I do regret some of the things I said, because we need some way to get the, after writing a lot of scripts and really getting into Windows and how it works and the different control methods and things like that, a screen reader just about has to have some way of knowing what the application is doing to send something to the screen. I'm working on a contract on a job site now that they're using a third-party grid display on a mainframe system, and that third-party grid display, since we can't get to the data before it gets to the screen, it just about has to have some code written specifically for that display. But with active access, if you can get the data or get the information before it actually gets to the screen, then you don't have to worry about setting up a screen here, or monitoring this, or setting up a hypertext window here. Just take it before it gets to the screen. But once it goes to the screen, then it's up to the programmer what he wants to do with it. He can do whatever he wants to with it. And there's just so many possibilities. You can display something on the screen like that with a different fonts, different colors, different graphics, and things like that, that waiting until it gets to the screen is a real difficult to deal with.
Yeah, I think that your comments about active accessibility in the past were quite similar to mine, which was that if all Windows programmers would behave and use standard Windows conventions, we wouldn't need it. But, they have been using active accessibility in some very interesting and beneficial ways recently.
Yes, and active access was, when we were criticizing it, of course, it was fresh on the starting block, too. It was just starting out, so anything you've got starting out, you're going to have a period where everybody's trying to figure out what it's actually doing, and even the active access team, sometimes I wonder if they knew what they were doing, and some of my criticism was that I didn't think they did know that once they got an idea of what to do, what the screen readers needed, what the other adaptive the equipment users needed, then, you know, they were able to point it in the right direction. It's not a cure-all, it's got problems, but it's still pretty neat.
Oh, well, it sounds like we have somebody using internet telephony who's popped in. Hello, this is Blindline. You have a question for Dennis.
Hi, John. Matt Campbell.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
Pretty good. I wanted to mention an idea that I had regarding ASAW and maybe ASAP. Since Larry is working for the American Printing House now, and if he's not making money off of the product, perhaps he could really... so that other programmers could work on the product on ASAW and ASAP or use the code in their own products.
Okay, I caught about half of that. You're cutting in and out on that. Could you repeat that last part?
Yeah, you're very, very, very loud, Matt, and I think it's probably distorting. I'm having to drop you right back.
Sorry about that, Jonathan. I'll move my mic a little. How's this?
That's a lot better.
Okay. What I was saying is that since Larry is working for the American Printing House, and if he's not making money off of ASAW and ASAP, perhaps he should release the source code so that more programmers can work on the screen readers or use the code in their own products.
Okay, so essentially, any chance of the source code being made available for ASAW, Dennis?
Yes, I heard at that time. I doubt he'll ever do that. I mean, ASAP is really good. It's still a viable option. There's still a lot of a lot of use for ASAP out there. You got educational systems, educational institutions needing advanced access.
Okay, maybe not ASAP.
I'm sure he's had that suggestion made to him several times. I still don't think he'll do it. But it's still something he works on every now and then. You see a new beta up on the MicroTalk site, every now and then. But whether he'll get up the source code,
maybe he'll come out with something good someday. You mentioned that you would never go back to DOS now that you've used Windows, but that command line interface, screen reader does a better job of reading that, I think. What do you think about Linux? Would you consider using that?
Yes, I would. I've got a couple of friends who are really using that now, and they're getting a lot of good access out of it. It's something I haven't really had time to jump into yet, but it does look promising. I mean, it looks good on a lot of different levels, especially on access. But no, I haven't really had a chance to get into that yet.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's all I had to say.
Thanks very much, Matt. Good call. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Matt Campbell, who, of course, can be heard on Main Menu espousing the joys of Linux in his Look at Linux section, which is really great value, and a lot of people enjoy that. That would certainly make...
Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay, bye now. That would certainly make ASAW a bit unique, Dennis, wouldn't it? It would kind of make ASAW stand out.
You forgot to hang me up.
Yeah, I can't do that, I'm afraid, Matt, because I've lost the connection.
Okay, you
might have to reboot. Yeah, an open source screen reader would certainly be something a bit different, wouldn't it?
Yes. Still, he uses this. I assume he uses the same same routine or the same concept to get the screen data that he does with ASAP. And you know, like I said, with ASAP, it still gives more screen data than any other screen reader automatically, as well as ASAW. ASAW gives more of the Windows screen automatically than any other screen reader out there. It's just that you can't do anything with that data once you get it. There's no user design key capability, no scripting capability, no sign function. Several key functions that it needs to be there so to be a viable use for the Windows user. But it still gives you more screen data. I've got clients that use ASAW to install applications and then use something else after they get it installed. So,
absolutely, yeah. Okay, that's an interesting concept. We have another call on the line for Dennis Brown. Hello, this is Blindline.
Hi, Dennis. This is Daryl Shandro. Dennis and Jonathan, good evening.
How are you doing?
All right, Dennis. It's nice to finally speak with you. Before I proceed... before I proceed, I just wanted to say, you know, I really appreciate all of your efforts for accessibility in the area of JFW scripting and other things, and working on trying to master the script language. But wow, the ways in which some of these programs are inaccessible are just mind-boggling and somewhat difficult to figure out how to program. But my question was, I want to clear up my understanding on the ways in which a screen reader can gain access to information. I understand the off-screen model and active accessibility. I understand that there's a third method called common object model. And what I want to know is that at all related to active accessibility?
Asking the wrong guy there, but it is a very neat way to get to the objects of how they're sending the material to the screen. And I, in the situation I talked about a little while ago, that the access to the grid, the inaccessible grid sending the material to the screen, that would be a perfect fix for that if I could get to the object modules and get to the data before it actually gets to the screen. But it is another method of getting the data without reading it directly from the display. And it's really neat if you can find an application that uses it, like Word, Excel, all those guys use it. And it's really neat. I'd like to see a lot more applications do that type of exposing of the objects so that you can get to it. It would sure make my life easier.
Do you have to have active accessibility to do that? Does that run through active accessibility?
No, not to my knowledge. No. I don't think so.
No. Well, you know...
Okay. That's fine. That's a very good question. Actually, I'm wondering, Dennis, whether WindowEyes uses that. I'm not sure whether they do. They seem to have put a lot of faith in MSAA. But are they giving people access to the common object model?
Well, that's something that JAWS does. It does have a feature where if the application is exposing it and you can get that information from the developer or from the server itself, then you can access the material that way. And, you know, I think it's a lot better than active access because it gives the end user the ability to get to the data rather than having to do it at a low level. So I think it's really neat. I'd like to see it developed even more.
Did you have anything else for Dennis, Darrell?
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm trying to think of accessibility in another manner other than just the technical manner, because there are some areas that we just cannot make accessible right now, such as the Citrix client-server technology and things like that. And you know, I don't know what we're going to have to do here, but it's a matter of public education, and I think it is time that when developers do not want to utilize standard Windows controls, that they be somehow compelled to utilize either MSAA or Common Object Model or some future technology coming down the line. Maybe I should change my mind and go to law school or something the way I talk, but accessibility is a civil right. We are living and breathing human beings who just happen to be blind.
Well, in scripting most applications, if you get an application that, just taking the JavaScript, for instance, that you can get to the data, you can look for several indicators to find out what the data is, where it is, the control ID, the control name, the real window name, and all the different items you can access with the JavaScript to find out if you're in the right location or how to get to the data or whatever. But if the programmer doesn't put that data in, then you know it does make it difficult to actually find out where you're at, what you want to do, where you want to go to get that information, what it is, how to read it, how to access it. So It's sort of like you're left with a terminal situation where you just got one screen and all the controls are in the background, and you have no, you know, the controls are not distinguished on one from another by any of the normal Windows indicators, like the font, the control ID, the handle. You know, just everything's going to be different every time. So there's nothing static there to nail with a set of scripts so that it's going to act that way the next time you go in. And it does get difficult. I don't know what the solution is, public education on accessibility. I was told by a client the other day that Janet Reno made a speech to some people in Washington. I forget, some kind of government office managers, and telling them that their software and their sites and everything else has to be accessible by August of this year, because in order to comply with the ADA. And I got that secondhand, but, you know, if that's true, then you're going to see a lot of people scrambling before August. Or they'll get another extension or something. And but, yeah, something does have to be done. If they don't use standard programming procedures and standard Windows controls, then, you know, it is difficult for us to actually try to get the information.
That's excellent. Well, thanks very much for that question, Daryl, and keep fighting the good fight.
Thank you very much, and nice to speak with you, Dennis.
Sure, same here.
Okay, bye now. Listening to Blindline, we're speaking with Dennis Brown on ACB Radio Mainstream. You're welcome to give us a call. The number's in the title bar. I think the Janet Reno comments came as a result of the fact that the government has just released a report on the general compliance of government departments in, with Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act, and that is coming into force very shortly and is going to be mandatory. And it's actually quite an interesting report. I took a look at the executive summary the other day, and obviously 508 theoretically holds a lot of promise, I would have thought, because it at least is trying to stipulate that any product that is purchased by the federal government has to be accessible if it's reasonable for accessibility to be demanded, and hopefully that will see some definite improvements.
Yes, do you see who decides what's accessible? I mean, do they have a what are they using to decide is accessible and what isn't accessible?
Well, that is a very thorny question that you pose, because there are many people who blame their inability to use an application, which is not a criticism, because some people find certain applications intuitive and some people don't, but they use alleged inaccessibility as a mask for their personal inability not to use an application, and that can often be a problem distinguishing between genuine accessibility and a user problem.
Yes. Exactly. Does it specify accessibility by the blind or by the deaf? I heard one Canadian, a bad Canadian at that, you know, he claimed that as long as the building had a wheelchair ramp at the front door, then it was complying with all articles of the ADA, which, of course, is ridiculous. But, yeah, who decides which disability gets priority? I mean, how do you decide what's accessible and what isn't? Who actually sets that?
Well, we definitely intend to have someone like Debbie Cook, who's worked quite closely on those guidelines. But certainly, I believe that they're supposed to be universally accessible, which should mean, to all people with disabilities. But let me ask you about what happened after you left MicroTalk in 1998, because you've been doing some very interesting things since then.
Actually, I just, did a sabbatical for about a year. And, we built a new house and moved into it and got to meet my kids again. It seems like when I was with MicroTalk, just, being working all day and everything. But after about a year, I just started taking up different screen readers and looking at them, and I started looking at the script languages of JFW and tried a couple of them, and it hasn't looked back. It's just really been neat. They have now, I believe they have like 475 functions or scripts or something, and it's the only thing I've seen that gives us the ability to, or at least gives more ability to make the screen reader do what you want it to do in any given situation. And Window Eyes is a fantastic screen reader, and it's neat for a lot of things. I just assert that the power of the JFW scripts, I can really do a lot with that.
So are there times when you would recommend WindowEyes over JFW, or would you always recommend JFW as the best screen reader right now?
Put me on the spot. Okay. I would have to say JFW, and again, because of the scripting language. That, you know, now, this is just my personal preference, and doesn't mean a hill of beans to anybody, but I like JFW because it does give me the ability to, if I get into a fix with an application to where it's giving these fits and I can't access it, I've got 475 different chances to try to make it that way. And if WindowEyes could come out with some type of a scripting language or enhance what they've got, which I understand they have with this upcoming version, it'll be interesting to see what it'll do. But the ability to customize JFW with the scripting language, I would prefer JFW.
What do you say to those who say that the way that WindowEyes structures its configuration ability, which is really very much menu-driven and dialog box-driven, makes it more configurable for the average screen reader user, those who do not have a vent for programming?
Yes, I believe that's true. And the JFW scripting language doesn't have to be that difficult. It really isn't once you get the basics down. They finally came out with a scripting manual, a tutorial. But there's still some areas of JFW that I just do not agree with. In my opinion, they don't support the script language. It's the meat and potatoes of their application, and they don't really support it as is. Getting in reference data out there, training people to use it, training people, getting support once the person has already learned the basics. I mean, it's like once you learn the basics, once you do the tutorial, or if you go to Florida to their resident course there for those two or three days and learn how to do scripts. After that, you're just sort of out in the wind. And that's one of the reasons I started the JFW script list to, so that the users can get each other support. And it's frustrating at times. It's like having a Ferrari and having to drive it at 35 miles an hour. The power is there, man. They've got some functions in there that can do some outstanding stuff. But giving the user the ability to learn how to do that is something like pulling teeth from those guys. So a menu-driven configuration or set file type thing that WindowEyes has is good. It would be neat if they could really add 475 functions to it. But the JFW scripting language does not have to be as difficult as it is, and it doesn't have to be intimidating like it is. And if they start coming out with reference manuals and a more user-friendly atmosphere, I think more and more people will get into it. And we've seen a lot of people go with JFW scripts that they didn't realize they could just go in and alter the existing scripts to make the screen reader a lot more friendly, to give more feedback. You know, just going in and adding the say line to the JAWS cursor function so that when you invoke the JAWS cursor, it reads the current line. I mean, that's a huge feedback. You don't have to move around the screen to try to figure out where you're at. When you invoke the JAWS cursor, it automatically reads that line. Just small things like that, and that's something you can do with a JFW script. And I like seeing new users actually giving it a try, and it's amazing some of the feedback you get when somebody does something successful like that. They had no idea they could do it. They didn't realize it was that simple, even though it can be difficult at times, but at least it does let them know that they can do a lot with that screen reader. My personal advice is they need to get more reference out there. They need to get more support for it.
So this list that you've started relating to JFW scripting, is that for the power user or for people who are wanting to learn about scripting, or a bit of both?
Both. Yeah, you can't become a power user until you actually do a little bit of scripting and realize that there's some basic format that you have to follow. And you know, once you learn just the basics of the beginning script, ending script, the compiling function, the listing of the script, selecting which script, passing information, that's not difficult to do. You don't really need to be a rocket scientist to do that. And it's just that the support that's offered, it makes it seem difficult, and it's intimidating, and it doesn't need to be. That's my personal opinion, and I'm sure I may be in a minority, but I just don't think it's supported as much as it should be. If you got a lot of power there that that you don't really know what to do with. It's like having a, you know, like a Ferrari with no user manual. It's you got the power to do something, but they just you don't know how to turn it on.
Even worse, maybe a Ferrari with a blind person behind the wheel.
Exactly. Yeah, to open their eyes and give them eyesight, and do that by getting them a detailed reference manual of the script, the functions, what they do, categorize all of them, so that you know what you can. Got a list of what you can look through when you need to do a certain function, and make it a lot more user friendly. The scripting language itself is very, very powerful, but the support behind it is very minimal. It doesn't need to be that way. I still think it's the most powerful screen reader out there, but. You know, it's not the most user-friendly one due to that, and because of the fact that it's not supported like it should be on the scripting language.
So how do people subscribe to the JFW Scripts List?
You just send an empty message to jfwscripts-subscribe@egroups.com.
Okay, so it's jfwscripts-subscribe@egroups.com. I know that when you took up the JFW scripting language and really became to master it and started writing things and advising people, there was this erroneous rumor going around the place for a long time that you were working for Henter Joyce, and you had to actually actively dispel it.
No, they have a concrete, a rock-solid rule that you have to move to St. Pete to do that, and, I wasn't willing to move, and so it stopped there. With the hearing difficulty, I can't do inter-office work with telephones ringing in the background, someone talking on the phone or something like that. It just totally shuts out the hearing aid, because a hearing aid amplifies everything at the same time. So that's what makes mobility, inner-city mobility, out of the question, because all the traffic noise is coming in one direction, and I had no idea where the traffic is. So I almost got a couple of mobility instructors run over and run down in the street. So the same thing with classroom environments. Sitting in a classroom, if somebody slides their seat or the professor turns around and writes something on the board, I just miss what he said because of the hearing difficulty. Same thing with inner office work. I tried it a couple of times. It just flat out didn't work. So even if if Henter Joyce was inclined to hire me, and I was inclined to move to St. Petersburg, Florida, I'd still have to work out of my home. I just built a home with built-in networking and, extra things that sort of adapted to my disabilities. But, that was a rumor going around that Henter Joyce was interested, but, that's one thing that would have never allowed it to happen was that I'm not willing to move.
You had a disclaimer at one point on your email, didn't you? I do not work for Henter Joyce.
Yeah, exactly. I had sent out resumes to several different companies, and I got feedback back from them, and they all thought I worked for Henter Joyce just because I had the JFW Scripts List and the blind programming list and things like that. But no, I don't.
Now, you have, as you just mentioned, the blind programming list, and that's associated with blindprogramming.com. Tell us a bit about those projects. Very interesting site you have there.
Well, the blindprogramming.com, it was an offshoot from the blind programming list. The blind programming list was just a list that blind users, whether a novice, expert, or whatever, can go on and ask any question about any part of programming, and whether it's JavaScript, C++, assembly, basic, visual basic. We've got a lot of good people on there who know what they're doing. We've got a couple of sighted people on there that gives you an idea of if you got a question on how a screen is displayed. They jump in, and it's got a couple hundred people on there. I think maybe 260, 270 at last count. And everybody, you got a lot of new people there trying to learn how to do programming. And they're really excited when they write this first little application and see that it actually works. And, once you follow a couple of sets of rules, it's really neat. And then the other problem was the accessibility to documentation, manuals, tutorials, and things like that. So I set up the blindprogramming.com where we have tons of material in accessible format on Visual Basic, C, C++, Unix, Java, and that it just any type of programming. And a lot of this stuff is linked to the empowermentzone.com. That's a very, very good resource there. That it just gives blind people a place to go and find material, help files, tutorials, things like that that you can't get elsewhere. So it is pretty active, but it's really neat. And same thing with the JFW scripts. Anybody can come on there, whether you want to learn scripts or you want to help answer questions somebody may have. Same thing with the blind programming. If you want to learn programming, or if you've got questions about it, or if you've got a routine that keeps hanging all the time and you want some professionals to bounce it off of there, then, you know, it's a neat place to go. And that would be blindprogramming-subscribe@egroups.com.
What sort of intellectual prerequisites do you need to be a programmer? I mean, surely anybody can't be a programmer.
Desire. That's the first thing. If you got the desire to do it, then you know, you can do it. Look at all the blind programmers out there. You know, they weren't born knowing it, and you know, they really had to work hard at it, but they had a desire to try to make the computer do what they wanted it to do. They didn't like applications that they downloaded. For some reason, they didn't have this feature that they wanted or that feature that they wanted, so they decided to try it themselves. And with the Windows access, the Visual Basic environment is really it's really taken off. A lot of people are really getting into that. And Visual C, Visual C++, a lot of the screen readers had difficulty reading those development environments that like that. But for instance, there's a toolbox in Visual Basic that it just defies all logic, and that's where you select your controls to put them onto the form. And we actually wrote to the Visual Basic development team at Microsoft, and they said in the next version they will make that NSAA compatible so that blind people can get access to it. So it's there is hope.
And do you have your company, DB Tech? What does that do?
I basically customize script files and set files for applications, whether it's for organizations or government organizations, individual companies, or individuals. They send an application, and I try to write scripts and set files for it.
And is that something that people are taking up? You're getting enough customers to keep bread on the table?
Yes, definitely. And with the with the speech that Janet Reno made last week, that's bound to pick up before August, because a lot of people are going to try to get their sites accessible. But yes, it's it keeps me busy. It's a 10-hour-day job.
Yeah,
so
and
it does. So
you make some sort of estimate, do you? If somebody brings an application to you that you might not even be familiar with, somebody dumps this, let's say a database application that somebody's written in-house on you, how do you go about firstly mastering the thing enough to know how it works so that you can then write scripts for it?
Well, the first thing, the prerequisite that I have, since I cannot go on site, I have to do everything from my office here, is that I'd be able to access it either across the internet or on a direct dial-up or you know, one of those, or they send me the application or I download the application or whatever. And most companies they don't have any problem with that as long as you sign a non-disclosure agreement. And then once I get it, I also make sure they give me the documentation. And on something like that, when you're going to script an application, the first thing you need to do is learn how to use the application. So that's the first thing I'll do, is run through the documentation, find out what it'll do, and then go into each area that it says it'll do and see if it actually does what it says it's going to do. I know it's going to do that, but does it get enough screen feedback on what it's doing? I recently finished a police data management system out of Louisiana, and it had nine different modules, and it was extremely, for the most part, but it's just some areas on the screen that it just the screen reader would never pick up. And also there's toolbars that you can only access with mouse. And that, again, is what I like about the GFW scripts. It gave me the ability to build a menu so that the user could just use the JAWS menu to access those toolbars, those buttons. So they didn't have to try to run the mouse up there and find out what button they wanted to click on it and all that. So basically you just go through each screen, especially the ones that the users are going to use. You write your report, send it to them, and tell them, this is what I think it's going to take, this is what it's going to cost, this is how many hours it's going to take. And then they'll either, you know, send you a counter proposal back and forth, and then once you both agree on it, then you just get the signed contract, and there you go.
And are there times when you have to go back to the programmer and say, look, this is just totally screen reader hostile, and you're going to have to modify the application?
Yes, that's one of the prerequisites. That's one of the stipulations in the contract, is that we get access to the developer, or to the, at least to the tech support of the company that's, or the developing company. And usually if the tech, when he doesn't know it, he will turn you over to the developer. And then the developer, you know, you can tell him exactly what you're trying to do and why what he's doing isn't working correctly. And in most cases, they will actually try to go in and change the attribute or change a color or change a font so that the screen reader can pick it up. So it's really encouraging doing that. And one of the systems I'm working on here in Georgia with that grid that just flat out defies all speech, they're actually, we're going back and forth. They're sending different modules to me to try with different attributes to see if they can thin down one with this new grid that we could access. If not, you know, that's to be seen, but they're really helpful. Most developers are really open to talk to the person to find out what they need in order to get access to it. As long as you don't ask them to do something that's going to disable it for the sighted person. And, you know, for the most part, you can tell, and this won't affect what the sighted person sees at all, if you just underline the entire line so the screen reader can have an attribute to pick up on. And they're more than willing to do that in most cases.
So does your work only involve corporations? Or, for example, if I downloaded this wacky new MP3 player, for instance, that doesn't look very speech-friendly, and I wrote to you and said, I'm prepared to pay for you to write me some scripts for this wacky MP3 player, would you do that sort of work?
Yes, I would evaluate it and see what it needed and other thing, and then I'd send you a proposal of how long it would take, what it would cost, and... Now, something on individuals is you have to, you got some applications out there that cost $29 and they send it to you to script and you realize it's going to take 10, 20 hours to script it. And so you wind up the scripts costing more than the application itself did. So on things like that, you usually don't charge an hourly rate. You charge a set rate and you say, okay, I can script it for this. And if it's too high, they'll say, well, just... what can you do for this, and then for this price, and then you tell them what areas you can script for them, and you know, in most cases they'll ask you to just script the areas they use, and you know, later on they'll come back and say, can you add this area, and so for a small fee you add that area to it, and so it's an ongoing thing, but you know, if you do it right where people can't get access to it, then you know, they're always coming back to you to modify it, update it, or whatever. So it's a neat way to meet people, and it's a neat way to see, you know, how applications work. And I've learned a lot of different applications that I don't think I would have ever used, and you know, if I didn't have this company.
I suppose one of the dilemmas that many people in this industry have is that everybody's motivated by a genuine desire to help other blind people, especially blind people themselves who are in this industry. So, if you've got a program that is of general interest, how do you make a decision about whether to just donate those scripts to the public domain and do it for the good of the blind community?
If I use it, you know, if I use it and continually, you know, when I use an application, I don't sit and script the entire thing. I'll use what I do, what I need to use, and then as I go, if I want this line to read or something, I'll hop in and make a script, compile it, hop back out, and then go out my way. And then the next time I use it, I see another area that I'd like to had read to me, so I'll set that up to automatically read, and you know, things like that as I go. And then somebody on the list says, hey, does anybody have script files for DNS config utility or something like that? So I don't mind posting those. And if I'm going to use the application, I'm not going through any expense to actually create the script, so why charge?
I guess you must get a lot of personal emails every day from people begging for help, do you?
Yes, there's a lot of things you have to tell them, hey, I just don't have time right now. I mean, they want to know, can you write scripts for Microsoft 92000? And I've got the application, but I just really haven't had time to use it. And as I script it as I go, I'll you know, write scripts for it and other things. But a lot of times you just have to tell them, sorry, I can't do that. I just really, really don't have the time to do that right now, but I'll take a look at it. But I really don't mind answering questions on scripting and things like that, because once people see the answer, and then I try to comment what I do quite a bit so they can get an idea of what's happening, and then it piques their interest in writing scripts. And the more they know about writing the scripts, and you know, the more they can go in and make the modifications they need and get more usability, I guess you'd say, out of the screen reader.
And I guess the best way for people to find you is just to go to the blindprogramming.com website, isn't it? And there's a mail link for you there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a link there. It's a DD Tech, or just send a message to Dennis at blindprogramming.com or Brown99 at blindprogramming.com. Anything at blindprogramming.com will get to me, so it's just blindprogramming.com. But yeah, and also join the JF30 scripts list and the blind programming list, and see how much fun you can have making a computer do what you want it to do.
Well, this has been a fascinating hour, and you know, I for one, every time your name comes up on lists that you're on, pretty much read every message that you post and learn something daily. So I appreciate you giving up this hour to chat with us, and based on the number of people listening right now, I know a lot of other people do, so thank you for all the work that you do.
I'm glad to do it. I'm just a user. I'm a user out there that if I see a question I can answer, I answer it. If I see a question I can't answer, I always like to find out why can't I answer it.
Well, I wonder if someone's got a last-minute question for you there, Dennis. We just got a call come up. Hello, you have a question for Dennis.
Yes, I certainly do. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. This is Michael Cattell here in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
How are you doing today?
Oh, good. I talked to you, I think, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the ASAP days.
Yes.
Question with ASAW. I'm interested in being a DJ, and many of these radio stations use a program called BSI Wave Station for automation. Does ASAW or any of its components work with BSI or any other automation tool?
Oh, goodness. I'm trying to think back on my ASAW days. It's a couple of years ago. I couldn't say. One thing I could say is download the demo and see what happens.
Okay, now Jonathan, now, have you ever used BSI Wave Station?
Yes, I have. I downloaded the demo, not of the latest version, but maybe a year and a half ago, and did some playing around, and I found that one of the key issues with it is that its keyboard driver is quite aggressive, and I think the reason for that is that a lot of these automation programs want to control the entire PC, because the more applications that are running on a critical task like a radio station, the more chance that there'll be a GPF and the whole thing will shut down. And so a lot of them actually want to quite aggressively get rid of programs like screen readers. And I believe there was a mod written for Audio Wizard, which is another automation product that allowed WindowEyes to get a look in. I don't know whether it works with all screen readers or whether it was WindowEyes specific. Yeah, there are some blind broadcasters using that stuff.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you very much, Michael. He does it every week, by the way, Dennis. He pushes the button.
That's something that with ASAP, had a lot of DOS-based radio broadcasting software, and with ASAP automatically loading the different set files when a new screen came up, that loading of the set file would shut the system down. So those broadcast programs are very, very keyboard intensive and more system intensive. They like taking that entire thing over. But once we turned off those set files like that, it worked fine. But I imagine you would have the same trouble in Windows.
Oh yeah, I think it's slightly worse, to be honest, but yeah, there may be some other blind broadcasters listening who can help Mike out with this question. But it's been a wonderful time to chat to you, Dennis, and you know, let's keep in touch, and we'll look forward to watching your scripts and continuing to read your emails.
I really enjoyed this, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Sure.
Bye-bye now. That's Dennis Brown from DB Tech, his own company. Reach him at www.blindprogramming.com, where he has information about the other lists and things that he does. What a fantastic guy. You're listening to Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. My name's Jonathan Mosen, and we come to the open forum part of the program. A number of things that you may like to discuss. If nothing I talk about takes your fancy, that's fine. Just give us a call and talk about anything that you like. The number is 1-212-812-2800, and courtesy of Spiderphone, enter the PIN 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3, and that number should be in the title bar of your Winamp and your Real Player. That's 1-212-812-2800, and enter the PIN 1-0-8-3-4-1-7-3. Thanks to Spiderphone.com, and of course we're live 9 till 11 Eastern. 1 till 3 GMT, Wednesday night / Thursday morning. If you're listening at any other time, well, this is a recording, and it will self-destruct. No. So you may have a comment about a number of the things that I want to raise. Firstly, something relatively non-controversial, and that is that we have had a number of questions about our main menu program and people wanting to be able to skim more easily through main menu. And we have a couple of options that we've been working on, and I'd be interested in people's comments on how they would best like to receive a main menu when it goes into the on-demand section. One option is that we can use the tuner model that we've used for the ACB stations, so that you can move between the different program segments with the page up and page down keys in your Real Player and the B and the Z keys in Winamp. And the other model would be that we'd just let you download the whole program so that you can keep it on your hard disk until you've had enough of it. And then you can skim through it with rewind and fast forward and doing things like that. So you may have a view on that. Somebody has a view on something, because we have a call on the line now. Hello, this is Blind Line.
Good evening, Jonathan. This is Marvin Rush.
How are you, Marvin? Nice to hear that wonderful southern accent of yours.
I have a couple of things. Should have gotten Dennis before he got away. I have a routine that's hanging up. It's called Microsoft Windows.
Yes.
But, no, I couldn't resist that. I'm sorry.
Well, you're not the only one that feels that way, I'm sure.
But one thing that at the beginning of the show, you talked about technical support. And, of course, you do. There are. I've dealt with a couple of places. Probably the best ones I've dealt with was a guy from Sony when I had my Sony CD-ROM burner, because they didn't know what screen readers did, but they did know that I needed mine installed, and they worked with me to get their software to run. But wow, I always think that it's a good thing to, you know, to let them know that you have a screen reader, because obviously that screen reader is thrown into the mix.
It's often a tricky one. I tend to wear headphones when I'm calling into a tech support place if I need tech support, so that they don't hear the speech, because what I find is that the moment they know I'm a blind person and that I use a screen reader, I'm immediately treated like a moron.
That's true. That and I've had that before, and you kind of feel like you know a lot of times that's an unfortunate thing, but it's true.
So there's some interesting thoughts, Marvin, and of course we're looking forward to hearing your contribution on Main Menu this weekend, when you'll be talking about a lovely new scanner that goes nice and fast, so people should tune in for that.
Oh, thanks a lot. One more thing before I go away. This is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, I guess, with the merger of... I don't know how everyone else is, I'm sure. Way, I'm probably working on my about third stretch, oh, maybe even fourth, since I've had... I mean, you buy something and then you spend... Not everyone has the government paying for these things. Spend your hard-earned money, and then 2 years down the road, it's not something that's viable anymore.
It's extremely distressing. It's such a rapidly changing industry, and I guess there's no way of avoiding that. But, yes, I mean, the computer that I bought back in September of last year is now considered on the slow end. In fact, I don't think you can really get Pentium 500s much anymore. So it's a bit disheartening, but I guess that's the rapidly changing nature of the biz.
Oh, that's true. I mean, I'm even worse off than that because I've got my Pentium 3500 just after Christmas.
Yeah, it's a drag. It really is.
Well, thanks a lot, Jonathan. Have a great day.
You too, Marvin. Have a lovely evening there.
Nah.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. You're listening to ACB Radio Blind Line, and we have another call on the line. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Matt again.
Ah, hello, Matt. How are you?
You don't mind me calling in twice, but...
Oh, well, we're in the open forum now, so that's okay.
I wanted to give my opinion about the ways for navigating the menu. I'm actually down with you forward to get to the part I want to hear, but I think the playlist option would be a good idea. And of course, you could use a .m3u file so that the same thing would work in Winamp Real Player or Windows Media Player or Freeamp for that matter.
Yeah, that's what we would do. We would use an M3U file. Unfortunately, Windows Media Player seems to still be choking on the M3U files a bit, and that's why we don't sort of mention it on our site. But the other players you mentioned will have no problem, and we would just set up one M3U file and whatever player you had as your default for that file type. And yes, it would work with Freeamp. It would kick in, and you'd just use the respective keys.
Yeah, I like that idea. I know sometimes I want to get to a certain part of main menu, like my Linux segment or the JFW beta thing or whatever.
Yes, as well. That's right. Well,
I thought that JFW beta thing on the first program was pretty funny.
It was. We're going to do a follow-up and do a whole feature on that. I'm not sure whether it's going to come off for this week or not, and if Patrick Perdue's listening, I'm desperate to get hold of him. But yeah, we will do a follow-up on that and have a whole look at this deck talk singing business. But I recorded your vote, and I appreciate your comment on that, because we want to do this in a way that satisfies the most people, and there's a strong preference at this stage for the playlist concept.
Yeah. By the way, I got a hold of a zip file with Patrick's MP3 files of the same deck. I like them.
Oh, they're very clever. And there's a lot of that stuff around, so we definitely intend to follow up. I think what we're trying to do on Main Menu is have a mix of reviews of current affairs that affects technology in the blindness area, and something a bit lighter as well, so we try and mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, by the way, on a look at Linux, once you've gotten through the two or three more weeks worth of demos have been done, I plan to have DuPont email just to give you a little look ahead at what I'm planning. Other things I'm thinking about are maybe showing you how to play MP3 files, or maybe even do a little CD ripping and encoding.
Wow, and all that under Linux, that is impressive.
Yeah, David, you're getting calls, so I'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks very much, Matt.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. This is the Blind Line Show, and we have quite a few calls banked up here, and we had a bit of a glitch earlier, and I have lost my ability to control the calls. So let's just see who wants to have a chat to us. Hello there.
Is it me?
It can be you. Why not? Who are we talking to?
Hi, Jonathan. Dan Kaiser here.
It's the famous Dan Kaiser. How are you, sir?
I'm live and direct. Hey, this is pretty neat. I mean, I'm hearing the audio coming back through my phone, and this is like a real radio station.
We do our best to please.
I'm sorry,
yes. And it's all thanks to...
not
a real radio station, no.
Yeah, we're that's real audio. This is MP3, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would go for the tuner idea on that, because that tuner idea is really great. Who invented that?
Oh, well, basically, it's a branding exercise, you see. I mean, basically, the tuner concept is just a playlist, and we just call it the ACB Radio Tuner because it sounds good, and I just put those playlists together.
Works for me. I have a couple of things. One is tech support. I agree with everybody when they say they turn off don't mention the speech, and the other thing is... my favorite tech support company of all of them is Hewlett-Packard, HP. They're phenomenal.
Yeah.
They walk when my printer gets jammed, they literally walk me through.
I have to agree with that, actually. I mean, I had a bit of a problem with a CD burner a while ago and called them, and they really spent a long time. And in the end, when it was clear that there was a bit of a problem, they replaced the component, no questions asked.
Yeah, they're very nice. Okay, yeah. Accessibility, I feel, is really good. The gal in Oregon, Teresa, can literally, you ever have the computer where you have to put the startup disk back in, the floppy, and the Windows crashes? Well, she actually walks you through it and walks you through the reset up again. And I think that's phenomenal. Somebody who can walk you through with no speech and then get your speech up just when you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is the computer from hell.
Well, that is pretty impressive.
Yeah. But hey, I want to thank you personally for putting up with my troubles this week. I had the show from hell. Not a lot of people don't know what I had to go through, but I was up till 3 in the morning trying to get my show together, because what happened in Cool Edit stripped out all the audio after I was done and left me with 44 bytes, and I don't know how that happened.
I'm always curious, why don't you use SoundForge, for goodness sake?
Well, you're going to train me on it on the 30th of July.
Okay, it's just so much more speech-friendly for editing than Cool Edit is.
How much is that program?
Well, the XP version's $49. The full version's a bit more.
Yeah, see, I want the version with all the bells and whistles and the noise filters and everything.
Yeah, unfortunately, the noise reduction plugin's separate again. It is quite an expensive thing to get into, but, man, nothing compares for speech friendliness.
Okay, and everybody have a good day, and I want to hear some of the other calls.
Okay, Dan, nice to hear from you. Thanks for phoning.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, bye. Well, we have an interesting call on the line that's creating all sorts of interesting echo, so we'll see if we can deal with that. Hello there.
Hello, Jonathan. This is John Glass in California.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. First of all, I want to echo my vote with Dan's for the tuner idea. I think that would be an excellent way to handle the shows that are on demand.
Well, you've certainly echoed it, because we've got a very interesting echo on the line for some reason here, so that's good.
Yes, we definitely do have quite a bit of echo. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that one of the shows that I would sure enjoy listening to in the future is if you were able to put one together on ACD radio, in terms of talking about the equipment that is used, the way that people are typically putting shows together, you know, just kind of a general discussion of ACB radio and how it works.
Yeah, you're not the first person to suggest that, actually, so obviously there's a bit of interest. It's probably a segment for Main Menu, I suspect. I need to do some thinking about that, because obviously we want to really encourage people to take part in ACB radio and create programs for it, so I think we should do that sooner rather than later. I think that's a great idea.
Well, it sounds great. I'll look forward to hearing that when it comes along. So, Jonathan, thank you very much for all of the great work that you're doing and the great programming that you're putting together for us, and I'll look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Well, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. This is ACB Radio Mainstream. This is the Blind Line Show, and let's hope that... Okay. Now, I think we might have one more call on the line. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. It's Maureen.
Maureen, how are you?
Good.
You're the source of the echo.
I'm sorry?
You're the source of the echo. It must be the long-distance provider you're using.
Well, I definitely like to echo also what the last caller was saying regarding a segment on ACB radio.
You would? Okay. Well, we might see how we're going. It'll either be this week or next week. I'll see if I can put something together. I just don't like dominating it too much, you see, so I try to get as many other contributors as possible.
Right, I know it's kind of a delicate balance, but I think it would be very interesting. Let's see. I also wanted to say, regarding your guest there earlier, I didn't get through then, but what I cannot understand is, at the very least, the screen reader manufacturer should be able to manage a Braille manual. I mean, it's ridiculous that that is not available.
That's a fair comment. Does JFW not have one?
No, not that I know of.
Okay. I don't know how many screen reader vendors do, but it's a very good point that you raise. I mean, Braille is still the easiest way to reference this sort of stuff.
Especially, you know, for people who are just starting out and are, I mean, obviously it can't be the only format, but it would certainly be useful as reference material for people who are starting out. The other thing I was thinking is that some of these tech support problems could be eliminated if people were taught differently. I think that very often people are taught by learning specific tasks rather than learning concepts behind programs, and I think if training focused more on that kind of issue, then people would know better questions to ask tech support people.
So you mean that instead of somebody saying, do this and this will happen, that they actually try and explain the concepts more?
Exactly. I think we need something between tutorials and manuals. Something like tutorials that start not from a task orientation, but from a concept orientation about programs, because then I can look at any program and at least know, you know, how would I navigate my way around this? How would I learn more about finding out what this program is about? And I think those things cross over to other applications and people could learn a lot more, a lot quicker initially.
There's some very interesting thoughts, and hopefully some people will respond to some of the things you've said, particularly the Braille menu concept. So I appreciate you hanging on for that.
All right. Hey.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. It's Maureen calling in from California, and you're with ACB Radio. This is the Blind Line Show. And let's see. There we go. Maureen's gone, and so has the echo. What a fascinating concept. Let's take this call, though. Hello, this is Blind Line.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Richard again. I just wanted to cast my vote for your option for the selection, and I think the B and the Z function like you have for the tuner is a very good idea.
Oh, that certainly sounds like the one that's winning out well and truly. So I will try and do that for next week's main menu, and we'll try it as an experiment. And
one other thing, I'm sorry. It's just the one thing that I noticed, and it's kind of strange, but it's not a bad thing, but it's just kind of strange. Even though, like if I go to the archives and select one of them to listen to, the MP3 streams, and even though in my WinAmp, in output selections, say that MP3 is selected, I'm still saving the stream, so it's like by the time the whole stream is ended,
I'm sorry, Richard, but my kids are going out, and they've all sort of come in to say goodbye.
Bye, Daddy. Bye,
Richard. That's little Richard, by the way, not the big one that's on the other end of the phone there. Yeah, sorry, Richard, that's live radio for you. You were saying? Have I frightened him off? You still with us, Richard? Oh, no. I think Richard's gone. I'm not sure whether it's my connection or his, but if you're still there, Richard, I can't hear you anymore. So I'm sorry about that. Very interesting. This is ACB Radio Blind Line, and I suppose I'd better try and make an effort to make sure that we're still connected after all of that. If you'd like to give us a call, hopefully it's all still working.
Do you hear me, Jonathan, now?
Yes, I can hear you now, Richard. Yes, you're back with us. I'm sorry, you were making a point that I missed there due to all that hubbub in my family here.
Yeah, I thought I heard a little thing coming across the program.
I'm sorry, we've lost you again, Richard. I think it might be your internet connection, so we might have to flag it away. But drop me an email. Drop it on the ACB Radio friends list, and we'll see if we can answer it there. I apologize for that. I know you're dialing in using internet telephony, and I suspect that it might be the connection at that end. So I'm sorry about that. This is ACB Radio Mainstream, and yes, well, that's encouraging. At least I've got my connection open. And if you'd like to give us a call, you're most welcome. I think we've now cleared the decks. Anybody here still? No, that's fine. So if you'd like to give us a call, you'll get straight through as somebody just has on the Blind Line show. Hello, this is Blind Line.
Hi, this is Derek Chaika, and I'm 10 years old.
How wonderful to hear from you. How are you today?
Good. I just had a question about, when I go into junior high, I'm either going to get a laptop or a Braille light. And I was wondering, like, what suggestions you would have about, like, using one of them in school versus the other.
Well, you might have a lot of people ringing up and giving their own opinions. I'll give you my personal opinion, and that is that using Braille at the age that you're at is really important, because the more you use Braille at this stage of your life, probably the faster you'll be. It allows you to read what you've written, of course, and that will really help you with your spelling. I would think that the Braille light would be the way to go right now.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I would think that also.
Where are you going to school?
I'm going to Sycamore Valley School. It's in California.
Okay, because I'm in New Zealand, which is a pretty long way away from where you are.
Yeah.
Do you get the kind of assistance that you need? You have like a, do they call them vision teachers? Is that what they call them?
Yeah, and I also have like a computer at school, and I have like an embosser and all that stuff.
Wow, so it sounds like you've got all the stuff there. And you obviously have a computer at home to be listening to us now, right?
Yeah.
That's
how I got the phone number.
What sort of things, what do you like doing best at school? Do you have a subject that you like best?
I like spelling.
Oh, well, you'll enjoy the Braille light then, because no doubt that'll help. So are you a good speller, or do you just like it?
Oh, I'm a pretty good speller.
Yeah. I don't know many kids who like what they're not good at, to be honest. I wasn't terribly good at maths when I was at school, and I hated maths. I'm sure if I liked it, it would have been because I was good at it.
Yeah. Well, I'm good at math, and I don't really like it.
Oh, well. There's an exception to every rule. So what screen reader are you using?
Window Eyes.
And you like that?
Yeah. I tried using JAWS once, but it was after I had Window Eyes, and I was at this technology camp, and I was like, what do I do here? I don't know these hotkeys, because I was so used to Window Eyes, and it was, like, weird.
And what sort of, yeah, that's often the way for everybody, that you get used to something, and then you try something else, and it just doesn't seem the same. What sort of things do you like doing when you're not in school? What are you interested in?
I don't know, I like to go on the internet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What are your favorite sites?
Well, I like to go to GW Micro.
Yeah. They're good guys, aren't they?
Yeah. And actually, last night I was on their audio site, and I heard all these new synthesizers that I never heard. Because right now I'm just using the Microsoft Speech, so actually to get the phone number, I had heard the phone number before, but in order to get it, I would have had to stop the thing and turn Window Eyes back on, and then read the title.
Yeah, well, I actually should have mentioned too that if you go into the support section of the ACB Radio site, the website, there's a page there that tells you about calling in, but I forgot to do that, so that's a very good point, because there are a lot of people using sound cards with the software speech synthesizers.
Yeah.
Hey, I really appreciate you giving us a call.
I don't have a good sound card for double sounds.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you got something like a Sound Blast Alive, or one of those Turtle Beach cards, or the Diamond Monster is another one, they all do more than one sound at once, so that might help.
There's another call.
Yeah, I really appreciate you giving us a call. It's great to hear from you, and I'd like to hear from some more young people. So hope to hear from you again sometime.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Bye.
Bye now. There you go. So if you have any comments, you might like to call in and give some advice on the Braille light versus the laptop. Gosh, we've got a couple of calls come in as a result of that. Hi, this is Blind Line.
Oh, hi, Jonathan. It's Marlena again.
Hello, Marlena. How are you?
Great. I hope it's okay to call back twice.
Sure, no problem.
Great. Actually, I wanted to make a couple of comments to the young lady that was just on.
I think that you're absolutely right. The Braille light is probably what she wants to be doing right now. And I wish she was one of my students. I would love to have a student like that. I think you're right to encourage her with her Braille. You know, we can use all this great adaptive technology, but if we can't read and write Braille, in my view, we're functionally illiterate.
I agree entirely with that.
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, for some of us, Braille is harder than for others. And for those of us who are congenitally blind, you know, Braille is perhaps more natural, and I understand that. But, you know, when the batteries run out, we've still got that slate and stylus. So we should take care not to become too technology dependent. And I wanted to make one last comment, and I hear you've got lots of calls, so I'll scoot. But I can't remember the person's name who was talking about the folks being trained to understand concepts. And while as a trainer, I completely agree with that, some of the students that I work with, concepts, Windows concepts, are so foreign for them to understand that the way we get to the comprehension of the concept is to understand the task. So it may take a bit longer to get to learning the concept, but if you can't comprehend what you're doing, then learn the task. And that makes the concept clearer.
It's the proverbial virtual chicken versus the electronic egg.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's an interesting point.
But I do agree that these screen reader manufacturers need to come out with their manuals in Braille. It's reprehensible that they don't.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. Always great to hear from you, and we'll be in touch.
All right, I'll be looking forward.
Me too. We'll see
okay,
you later.
See ya.
Okay, bye,
bye
now. This is ACB Radio Mainstream, and this is Blind Line, and we have a couple of other calls, and let's just see what we've got here. Hello, this is Blind Line.
Okay, now am I next?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay, cool. I don't know, because I didn't know if I was next or not. Well, yeah, I am. I'd like to make a comment here about the girl that called about the, was it Braille Light and stuff that you're talking about?
Yes.
I think...
I didn't catch the name, by the way, but I thought he said his name might have been Greg. But anyway, I could be wrong about that, because I'm doing a couple of things at once there. But anyway, it was a young person who rang.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And I think that Marlena was right, because I'm 17 and I'm in 11th grade, and we use every piece of equipment. I use a Slate and Stylus, Abacus, Braille Light, Braille and Speak. I know I use them all, and they all work together. If you use them all properly, they all integrate.
Right. So you would say that the Braille Light is the right thing for now?
Definitely, but when he or she gets into math, it's really not going to work, because equipment really doesn't work good with math, and it's really not the best. So the old-fashioned Braille writer works good with the math.
But you have got the calculator, the scientific calculator there, which may help. And, of course, the other thing is that as soon as we get this jolly unified Braille code sorted out, things like the Braille Light will work much better for that.
All right. Well, John, I love your program. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. This is Blind Line, and thank you for waiting. Hello there.
Jonathan, it's Maureen again. Sorry, but I have to call back in.
That's all right.
To make some comments about the 10-year-old caller.
Yes.
I really support a Braille Light also. I think that is the best option. And I also agree with the last caller. It's not a substitute for a Braille writer. I really do think there is something to be said for a Brailler. I see it kind of the equivalent of a pen, you know. I think a Brailler is good for math. What the Braille Light will let you do, though, is when I was going to college, I mean, you can have files for different subjects, and it's much easier for note-taking, and plus it doesn't make all the racket.
Well, what about the slate and stylus, though? I would have thought that was the real equivalent to the pen.
I suppose. I don't count that.
Why not?
I just absolutely hate it. I've always hated it ever since I was a little kid when they made me write pages and pages of this stuff as punishment for whatever trouble I got into.
Oh, really?
So I swore when I was older I would never use it again.
And you used to get into a lot of trouble, did you?
not too much.
Well, those are really interesting thoughts. Thank you very much for that.
Okay.
Okay, bye now. There we go, this is ACB Radio. We've got about 15 minutes left before we close for the day on ACB Radio Mainstream. If you'd like to give us a call, you're welcome to do that. I'm pretty sure we don't have any calls banked up. Anyone else here? That's fine. I'm sorry, I lost control quite early on in the piece of the interface, which is entirely my fault. Thanks to Spiderphone for providing it. They really do make Blindline tick along very nicely. Now, if you'd like to give us a call and talk about any of the issues that have been raised today, you're welcome to do that, and you will get straight through right now. The number is 212-812-2800. That's 212-812-2800. And courtesy of Spiderphone, you then enter the PIN 108-34173. That's 108-34173. Now, the National Association of Theatre Owners did a press release this week. What's their acronym? NATO. Are they NATO? Is that what they call themselves? The National Association of Theatre Owners? Well, how interesting. Anyway, this organisation, the National Association of Theatre Owners, have been responding to a lawsuit that has been filed, a couple in fact, one by a blind person, one by a deaf person, and I guess if we're talking about movies, maybe the movie See No Evil, Hear No Evil comes to mind, but anyway, we move quickly on. One of the things that they say in this media release is, the National Federation of the Blind has adopted a resolution opposing any legal mandate of audio description, such as descriptive video. The technology sought in the earlier suit, so they're responding to the suit. They say DVS technology, which offers an audio description of the visual images on the screen, provides no assistance to patrons who have been blind since birth, since they have no visual memory. Moreover, the audio descriptions can distort the artistic integrity of the film. Now, this is real give-me-a-bucket stuff as far as I'm concerned. I don't know, I haven't heard any comments at this stage from NFB members about this, but surely this outfit is quoting the NFB out of context. Surely they are. And what an incredible, ignorant, arrogant insult to everybody who has been blind since birth, to say that we are so thick that we don't have any kind of concept of what audio description means. And I hope that we all do whatever we can to disabuse this outfit of this pathetic suggestion. It is one of the most disgraceful media releases I have read in a very long time. Hello, this is Blindline.
Oh, Jonathan, is that me?
It is you.
It is me. Last time I checked. Wonderful. I wanted to say, first of all, that your interview with Dennis Brown was absolutely fantastic. I envy those people who can write scripts and set files, and it's a facility I certainly wish I had.
He's a clever dude. There's no doubt about that.
I'll tell you. Right now I'm trying to figure out a tech support page with some other application entirely, and they're telling me to do things in files. I have no idea what they are, let alone what they do. plus which, the young 10-year-old lady, I believe that I am in agreement with everyone. I believe that she is would be best served for every reason stated to get a Braille light, and there's plenty of time, and she obviously has access to any kind of technology she wants, so she will learn how to use everything, and the Braille light will help her with her spelling, will help her with continuing Braille. I was so lucky growing up, because our public school teacher, I'm kidding, music back here. He says, when we were young, we didn't have to use the Slayton. We had to use the Slayton stylus. Anyway, I was so lucky because I had a teacher who wanted us, we were in public school, and she wanted us to take part in the county spelling bee. And half of lunchtime was spent with the a braille copy of the county spelling list. And one person would read and everybody else would spell. You had the grade 2 spelling on the left-hand side and the grade 1 full spelling on the right-hand side. And we quizzed each other. And I think some of us may have gotten tired of it. I didn't mind it really, but I know there were a couple who were crazy about it. But by gosh, when I compare my spelling, I don't want to sound conceited or anything, but it's true. I have a pretty good grasp of spelling, and a lot of my friends just plain don't.
Does it matter, though, with spell checkers and things these days?
Well, I think it matters if you are trying to, if you're writing a letter, if you are writing a braille letter and you don't have, say you are writing on the Perkins, or especially if you don't have the context, because you won't always catch an error if it's, oh, Dave has called me from work for a couple of times. Is this context correct? Because sometimes the spell checker will decide not necessarily based on context. And I think if you have a concept of the word in a particular context, you might be able to say, nope, that's, I don't think that's right, or yes, I think that is right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think spelling, and again, if you have to go Slayton Stylus, there's no spell checker built in there.
No, there ain't no grammar checker either, bro. But I tell you something.
Yeah.
I do worry so much that you still hear people, so-called educational professionals, some of them saying that this technology is making Braille obsolete.
Hmm. No, everything complements. Braille complements electronic media, scanners complement opticons. I was also so glad that I didn't have to give up my opticon when I did purchase a scanner, because I find that there are times when I use both. As we've talked before, I'm lucky enough to have both JAWS and window eyes. Sometimes I use one eye, sometimes I use the other. The more tools we have at our disposal, the better off we are.
Well, those are some interesting thoughts, and so right now you'd certainly be right behind the idea of having a braille app for a 10-year-old.
Oh, definitely.
Excellent.
And, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I was just going to sort of wind you off because we just had another call on the line.
Okay.
But if you had something else, that's not a problem.
I know you do. I just want to make one other quick... what I was going to mention last night with this discussion of... Linux last week, what I was going to say was that I've been hearing that there's going to come a point in time when DOS won't be available to us. And
yay!
Those who prefer... Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. They'll want Linux.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I wouldn't miss DOS personally, but anyway, each to their own, I suppose.
Well, I wouldn't give up my Windows, but I do know folks who prefer the command line.
Yeah.
So you do have another call, so love to the family, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Lovely to hear from you.
Sure. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye now. I shouldn't wind the command line advocates up. I don't really feel quite that passionately about it. Anyway, this is Blind Line on ACB Radio. We've still got a bit of time to go, so you're welcome to give us a call, as someone else has done. So let's go back to the phones. Hello there.
I guess it's me again.
Marvin, how are you?
Ah, great. I just had one comment, and of course, I, along with everybody else, I think the Braille light would be the thing to use for the 10-year-old who called in, which I think that was wonderful.
Yeah, isn't it? It's just great. It'd be great to hear from some more young people.
Right. And one more thing, too. I hear last summer we had a conference of vision teachers here in Louisiana, and this conference was called the Braille Writer as a Mathematical Tool, which this is the way I teach mathematics myself. And to me, you cannot beat an old Perkins Brailler for teaching long division, multiplication, those things like that, because the placement of your numbers and everything like that is so critical.
Okay, so basically there is no substitute.
That is what I think. I mean, and I use scientific calculators, but, you know, nowadays, especially, teachers want you to show your work and with a Braille writer, and you can get the placement of all the numbers exactly as you want them, exactly as they should be. The man who taught us that course, incidentally, had a PhD in mathematics, God love him.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. And so basically what you're saying is, sure, go for the Braille light, but never lose your skills with the Perkins.
That's right. I mean, for those who can, those who have the mental facilities to do so, you should never let that go.
Marvelous. Thank you for that, Marvin. I just better rush away and get this call before we have to finish.
Okay, good night.
Thanks, night. This is ACB Radio Mainstream Blind Line. Let's go back to the phones. Hello there.
Hey, Jonathan. Dan Kaiser, one more time.
One more time. One more for the road. Two for the pavement and three for the curb.
I do, and I'm drinking a Bud Light just for you.
Right.
I'm curious about something, which reminded me when I forgot to ask my other question is, did you ever sell your house?
No, it's still on the market. Every Sunday afternoon we have to evacuate the place for an open home. And you reminded me of something that I meant to raise. We've had such a busy program, it hasn't been necessary to raise it. We are having a major conflict at home right now about names, because we're about 2 weeks away from the due date of our new arrival baby, and we are told by the what do you call the people who do those scans, whatever they're called, we were told by them that it's going to be a boy. They're pretty sure it was a boy, and we just cannot agree on a name. We just cannot agree, and this is a major source of debate.
I think you should name him Dan.
So does my wife, actually.
Well, that's such a good name.
And I say to her, it reminds me too much of the Dan Kaiser show already.
Yeah, we don't want that kind of disaster.
I wanted to call it Richard John Paul George Mosen, and I managed to get Richard Jonathan, so now I want Paul George, and she's not interested in that.
I like lingo there, George.
You know, yeah. Like it goes like that when you've been at it for a while, you see.
The final thing, I'm very disappointed in the trade-in cost. I was thinking of getting the Braille note. So I called in to the company and said, well, what would you take for a Braille Light 40? And they said $300. Now, that's disgusting.
What?
They will only take $300 on a Braille Light 40.
What planet are those guys on?
If they're going to get anywhere and try to obviate the 70,000 Braille and Speak products out there, they better get on the ball, or else they're not even going to get to first base.
I mean, I can understand that you expect a bit of depreciation on a trade-in, but $300, how much would it set you back a Braille Light 40? About $3,000 or $4,000, isn't it?
Well, my unit, yeah, $5,000. And that's an insult to my... to my pocketbook.
And there's no worse place to insult, I'm sure.
I tell you what. So I think that if they're going to get anywhere with their new product, they better do better than that. You know, they can take a loss in the beginning just to try to clean up the market, and that's the only way they're going to get ahead is to take the bottom out of the Braille and Speak market.
So did you protest most vociferously at this trade-in deal?
I just laughed.
How did they react?
You know, when they... they didn't react. So I'm not sure how aggressive they're going to be. You know, they had a good mailing campaign. I got the little brochure about the Braille note and the website and all that, and they're really aggressive there. But, you know, I was just very disappointed, because it's a nice-looking product, and I was very seriously thinking about getting one. But now I'm tied up with this Braille Light 40. I'm sort of stuck with it because they're not making it easy for me to get into their product.
Right. So, basically, you're going to stick with the 40, are you?
You know, until I hit the lotto. But that's really all I wanted to say, because I want to bring up that point to folks and stir up some more controversy, because I think that, you know, it's an important issue.
Well,
when you talk about new product.
Yeah, sure. Oh, I mean, keep up the good fight. And you're our last caller for the afternoon/evening, so I appreciate you rounding it off for us.
Okay, and I'm going to go over to the chat room on outofsight.org.nz.
Well, I'll tell you what, I might do that too. If people want to join us and continue this, go to www.outofsight.org.nz or NZ, and in about probably a quarter of an hour, I'll pop in there. So just go to outofsight.org.nz and then choose the voice chat link. It'll ask you to enter a username, etc. Just enter your name so that people will know who you are and chat. And basically it's really simple, because you just hold the F9 key down to talk. And let it up again when you want to hear everybody. It's great. So by all means, come and join us if you would like to continue. Thank you for a great program. Thanks to Dennis Brown. I have enormous admiration for that man. And we'll be back again Wednesday evenings, 9 to 11 Eastern. That's Thursday, 1 to 3 GMT, for another Blind Line. Till then, this is Jonathan Mosen saying take care of yourself. Bye for now.